No one.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another edition of the Gators Online Show. I am Keith Niebuhr. That is Zach Albaverde. We've got a lot to talk about. We've got Gator baseball playing. We've got Gator softball playing. We have another big week for Gator basketball. Zach, it seems like every week is a big week for Gators basketball. We're going to talk a little bit about some meetings that took place this week involving SEC leadership. But before we do any of that, Zach, as always, we've got to go to our big show sponsor. So take it away.
Absolutely. Each and every week, we want to start our show by giving a shout out to Big Game Football Factory, our lead sponsor for the Gators Online Show, and the producers of this fantastic football that you will see the UF football team using during the 2025 season. You've already seen them with it throughout spring camp, and you can get your hands on this ball. Head over to biggameusa.com. Use the code GatorsOnline to get 10% off your entire order and free shipping for a limited time. The Gators designed this ball with Big Game USA to ensure they're comfortable with it, so it's truly one of a kind. You can start your collection of Florida's official game balls today at biggameusa.com/Gators.
All right, there we go. I'm back. All right, Zach. So, again, a busy week. It seems like you're thinking, okay, it might be a slow week, but there was a lot going on, starting with really significant news for Florida Gators athletics. And you've kind of hinted that this was going to happen, maybe more than hinted. Alex Condon, a Florida star post player, received all SEC recognition this past season during Florida's national championship year. He's coming back, man. And, God, when you look at the pieces of this Florida basketball team, the front court, every significant star. I mean, Sam Alexis isn't coming back, but he really, you know, due to his injury, wasn't a factor down the stretch of the season. But all the big guns are back. And Alex Condon is maybe the biggest to announce so far that he's returning. Sure. What does this mean for the program, Zach? And I don't think you were the least bit surprised by this, but what does it mean? And kind of how did this all go down? Because he was testing those NBA draft waters.
He wasn't, and yeah, I wasn't surprised, but hearing from Todd Golden this week at SEC spring meetings, which we'll get to, he admitted that he was a little bit worried there after the combine finished, and Condon continued to have personal workouts with NBA teams. I want to say he had a workout with a team the day before he made his final decision and let the staff know. So this thing did go down to the wire. Alex took this process very seriously. I think folks remember one of the stories maybe that we wrote at Gators Online about how he kind of went through this process with the intention to turn pro. That was how he wanted to treat it. That was how he wanted to approach it. And it seems like that's how he went about it. He saw a lot of teams. He got a lot of feedback. Came into this process as kind of a early second round pick. There were a couple outlets out there that gave him some late first round projections, but he came out and said in an interview with ESPN, hey, if I'm going to turn pro, it's going to take a team basically guaranteeing me that I'm going to be a top 15 to 30 pick. He did not get that guarantee. And as Todd Golden said this week at SEC spring meetings, that's kind of hard for any prospect to get a guarantee like that with his status this far away from the draft. The draft is still a month away. So maybe kind of worked out for Florida in that sense. And you're right, Keith. Getting him back is by far the biggest returnee for Florida in 2025, 2026. And now everybody's talking about this team being a repeat contender for next season.
Well, you know, I wanted to ask you this before we get into what it means for the team, obviously, but Zach, we're not NBA scouts. We don't claim to know what these guys know or what coaches know, but you follow the NBA a lot. I follow the NBA a lot. You were, you know, 24+ Gators basketball games last year. You got to see Alex Condon up close. Do you personally, and again, let me preface this by saying, we're not claiming to be Red Auerbach and Pat Riley here, but you know, in your mind, just did you think he was ready to leave? Did you think he needed another year of seasoning? I know what I think.
Sure. I mean, one, could he have turned pro and had things come together and had a good NBA career? Absolutely. But this is not the time for him to make that jump. It just isn't. I think he knew that. I think the staff knew that. That doesn't mean that he can't gain a lot by going through this process and getting that feedback from NBA teams. But I think the combination of his injuries that he dealt with as a sophomore, which held him back in his game and then held him back throughout the season, both during SEC play and in the NCAA tournament, that didn't help his stock. And also the fact that he still has to show more within his game. And he's been the first person to talk about that throughout the draft process, is that he needs to become more of a perimeter player. He needs to become more of a scoring threat. There are some things that he needs to clean up with his game and eliminate some of the flaws and weaknesses that he's shown in his first 2 years. But this is a guy, once he puts it all together, once he has a full healthy season with multiple performances like he had at the one in Tuscaloosa, this is a guy that can be a first round top 15 type pick. And I think he knows that. I'm sure his camp knows that. And ultimately, it was not right for him to come out this early when he's got a chance to come back as a junior, improve his stock by doing those things I just talked about, and then be guaranteed to be a first-round pick instead of asking for a team to make him that guarantee. And that's kind of where it stands. And I think that's where everybody expected to.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't have – and look, he's a good player, but he averaged about 10 points a game. I mean, if you don't have that offense, that all-around offensive game in the NBA, you're kind of going to get eaten alive a little bit, at least in the early years, until you develop a role and all that. I mean, it's rough out there, and he's a major talent. And I think one of the things that really endeared himself to the Gator Nation, Zach, was how – even when he was struggling offensively, same with like Micah Hanlogman too, even when they struggle offensively, they hustle on the defensive end. Yeah,
play so hard.
Diving for balls. What's the microcosm? What are people going to remember? Is there a specific shot of Alex Condon's they're going to remember from this last season, or are they going to remember him diving for that loose ball at the end of the NCAA championship game? Now, obviously, that's the NCAA championship game. That's the final seconds. Of course, they're going to remember that over anything else. However, I think it was emblematic of what this guy does. And
former Australian rules player in soccer. I mean, that's what you get with Alex.
Well, you got to love that too, because these guys are all making, they're living the good life these days. I know he's from another country, but they're living the good life, related NIL, but he's out there diving for loose balls. And you know, you could get hurt. You got somebody get hit your shoulder. And that could impact you too. So I love the hustle in him and excited to see what he can bring to the table this next season. In fact, Zach, I was talking to Jimmy Dykes of ESPN the other day, one of their well-known national college basketball analysts, and does a lot of Florida basketball games. Yes. And he said, listen, this guy just made a big jump from season two to season three. Sure, he could have gone to the NBA right now and probably been fine. But if he makes another jump of that magnitude, you know, kind of look out, basically, because what he displayed last year was really a kind of the development, the potential for an all-around game. Bits and pieces here and there, the hustle always, the defensive play always, but, you know, just so many good pieces to his game. And now, Zach, you say, you look at this Florida roster, okay? Obviously, there's going to be a new backcourt, but when you look at the Florida roster, Alex Condon's back. Ruben Chinyelu, you and I pronounce his last name differently. Ruben Chinyelu is back after a strong season. Talk about a defensive player. He's back after a strong season. If he gets a little bit better on the offensive side, man. And then you've got Micah Hanlogden is back. And you know, he wasn't even healthy. You know, he takes a lot of criticism. There's no question about it. Micah does. Fans on message board, fans in the social media ether, because he's not this big-time scorer. He doesn't really have much of a offensive game, let's say. He's a putback. He's a finisher, alley-oop guy. But he doesn't really have an offensive, you know what I'm trying to say, Zach. He's not like Condon, let's put it that way. But he was hurt. He was coming back from a devastating injury. So we haven't seen his best. Like you mentioned, Condon was hurt at times. Chinyelu is really just learning to develop an offensive repertoire. Now, all three of these guys are back with some other pieces as well. Thomas Howe, major contributor at the four last year, the power forward, moving mainly to the three position this year. Zach, what a friggin' front court. I mean, this is pretty good. And in fact, Jimmy Dykes said going into the season, that's the number one front court in the country. Now, obviously, you got to go play this season. It's a long way off. The most recent season just ended. But, Zach, man, Dude, this is pretty impressive now.
It's impressive, and it's also, like you said, exciting to see what how that front court could grow and evolve in 2025 and six, because we know already that Thomas Hauck is going to be playing more of the three spot. Todd Golden has come out and said that that's where he wants to start him. We will still see him play the four, no doubt about it. And even though the Gators return their top four front court players, as you mentioned, they did lose Sam Alexis. So they're going to still need Tommy to play the four at times. But having him play the three, showcase some more of his three-point shooting and what he showed is going to be exciting to watch, and also huge for the Gators that he can help fill the void that's being left by Will Richard on the wing. And then we just mentioned Alex Condon and the efforts that he's going to make as in his junior season to showcase that he can shoot the three and be more of a perimeter player. And if he can be a stretch four for the Gators, that's a true threat from downtown. That's going to take their offense to the next level. And then last but not least, Ruben, he wants to showcase more on offense. He talked about that during the draft process. He says like he feels like he has more to offer on that end of the floor. And I think like the coaching staff will do with Alex Condon and Thomas Hauck, they're going to do the things that NBA teams want to see from them for them to improve their draft stock. And I think Florida will give Ruben that same opportunity. And honestly, with Thomas Hauck playing the three and Alex Condon being more of a stretch four, they might need Ruben Chinyelu to be more of a presence in the paint and provide them some production from a scoring standpoint. So I think that's something to watch for. And then last but certainly not least, Micah Handlogden. I mean, even just from the injury standpoint and the rust that he had, but also stamina. Like, he was out of shape. It was hard for him those first few games coming back. He's not going to go through any of that next season. Guy's going to be in incredible shape. He's probably his confidence and what he can do as a basketball player is probably going to be the best that it's been since his injury. And the Florida is going to need him to play a bigger role just because of their roster makeup and then some of the things that they're asking their other bigs to do. They're going to need their two centers, Ruben and Micah, to really, man the paint. And I think those guys are more than ready for that.
Here's my impersonation of Micah Handlogden. That's always him on the sideline. It always cracks me up. I'm like, dude, man, come on, man.
He was an all-star bench guy,
But here's my prediction, Zach. Out of those four, I think Micah Handlogden makes the biggest jump this next season. I think his game improves the most out of those guys. Now, you could argue that it's got the most to improve. Like, he's correct. I think, again, I don't know him personally at all. Never talked to him. Watch him play. Watch him hustle. See some potential there. You know, he's got loose hands. He's got to get a little better there. Obviously, the offensive repertoire has got to develop. But look who he's practicing against. Look who Ruben Chinyelu is practicing against. Look who Alex Condon is practicing against. Yeah. Practicing against. Look who Thomas Howe is practicing against. They're practicing against each other. This is sort of reminiscent of the roster. I want to say the team before the 04s won their first national title might have had more NBA guys than the two teams that won the national title.
Yeah, because you had David Lee and
– yeah, you had some of those other guys. And so they were practicing against each other. They're going to get better. This is going to be one of those situations where they're going to be improving. You got to go out and do it on the court with the bright lights on. I get that. But they're going to be improving maybe more during practices than games. And obviously that makes sense. You got a lot more practices. But they're going up against some elite guys and guys that hustle on both ends. So when you're facing Alex Condon in practice, you're getting better on both ends because he's good on both ends. And so he's going to make Chinyelu better. Chinyelu, I can't get his name right to say my
name. Call him Ruben.
Yeah, Ruben, RC. And so I love that. But hey, here's something, Zach, that I found interesting this week. I talked to a couple different, I have some stories coming in the next couple of weeks. But Jimmy Dykes of ESPN said, yeah, you know what? What's cool is that they're going to be able to lean on Florida. They're going to be able to lean on the experience of the front court early in the season as the backcourt, which includes new transfers, Boogie Flan, Xavier Lee, some high school guys, as those guys develop chemistry. Whereas last year, they leaned on the front court while the backcourt early, while the front court was sort of had some new pieces. Chinlayu, Howe was developing. You didn't have Hanglog until
mid-late. I mean, these guys were all coming in their sophomore years.
That's right. Alexis was new, I want to say. So now it's kind of a role reversal. But if I could tease one more story I'm going to be working on. I spoke to somebody this week, Zach, and I was curious about Xavien Lee, the Princeton transfer guard coming in. I said, it's going to be a major transition for him coming from the Ivy League. I didn't get an answer I was expecting. I didn't get a time frame. I got a, don't you dare sell the Ivy League short. Those guys have a unique schedule. Yeah, I didn't know this. They play Friday and Saturday off and back-to-back, Zach.
Oh, wow.
And he said, this person I talked to, and we'll get in, we'll have some stories coming. I don't want to give it all away. Said, listen, that is an underrated league with some of the best coaches in the country. And this guy's got the skill set. And sure enough, a day later, he gets this big NIL deal.
Man.
And I'm going to tell you, they don't give those out to people they think suck. Okay. I mean, so Xavien Lee must be something unique here is what I'm thinking. But Zach, it is going to be an interesting, a total role reversal of who's going to maybe lead the team early. What do you like about this roster in totality? Because it looks pretty doggone good, man.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they had to reload in the backcourt. And for Florida to go out, and so I don't know if people realize this because I think a lot of people have been fixated on Lee and Flan. But, you know, don't forget the fact that A.J. Brown is also a top 100 transfer in the On3 industry transfer rankings. Florida signed three top 100 transfers for the second straight cycle. So shout out to Todd Golden and his staff just cleaning up in the portal once again. And, you know, that's what you have to like, just what they return in the front court and all those pieces that they have there, coupled with just so much dynamic players that they brought in through the portal. I think Boogie Flan obviously stands out from the pack. But you mentioned Xavien Lee. I think that they're going to work really well together, not only as a tandem in the front court, but with Florida's other bigs. And certainly the chemistry between Xavien Lee and Thomas Houck is going to be beneficial. And then I think A.J. Brown is going to be a huge impact for this team as a guy that can play the three spot, you know, when Houck is at the four or when he's on the bench. And then he's got the capability to play the two as well. I think his brother, Isaiah Brown, is going to make a huge impact this coming season. Both of those guys, be pretty cool to see them on the floor at the same time at some points during the season. And then I really like Florida's young guards as well. And I think that Alex Lloyd will be the one that we see the most probably as a freshman and be able to make an impact on this team in the rotation. But, I mean, you just see what they have on paper from their starting lineup to the rotation that they have that right now looks like it could be, you know, at least 8 to 9 deep. You are already seeing several outlets, including some of the reporters from ESPN that you just talked to, Keith. They're looking at Florida as another Final Four contender, as a preseason top five team. You know, Todd Golden at the White House said that's what he thought Florida was going to be when he told the president. And I think it's legit. This is a team and a roster with its personnel that can 100% make another run in March. Now, like you said, they're going to have to figure some things out early on in the season in terms of how it works with their backcourt. You got two point guards at the one and two spots. So them figuring out their chemistry, how they both work on and off the ball is going to be something that they, you know, it's got to come together. I don't have any doubts that it will, but it does have to come together. And then also the new roles with some of the front court players as Tommy adjusts to playing more three, as Condon tries to be more of a stretch four, and just how that looks and how those guys kind of complement each other. It's going to be fun to watch. And man, I cannot wait for this season. It's some of the trips that we're taking. Keith and I are going to Madison Square Garden. We're going to be in New York, baby.
You know, I'd say about a year ago at this time, Todd Golden probably wasn't even one of the most 50 recognizable names in college basketball. Now he's top five, top 10 for sure. I don't know that he's still on the radar of a lot of NBA teams yet. They're kind of in their own bubble in a sense.
Sure.
He goes out and puts together another big season like they just had. And I'm just telling everybody, Florida's going to be fighting off NBA teams because people are going to figure out this is a really bright guy. Zach, two things that really strike me with this roster, and we can move on to the next topic. I know we're going to do some more ad reads, but I actually think they're going to have more depth next season. If the guys make the rise, I mean, we haven't even mentioned Urban Klapchar, okay?
Klavzar.
What's that?
Klavzar.
Klavzar. What did I say? Klapchar?
You just need to go with first names, Steve.
God, I swear.
This is all Todd Golden's fault with all of his international recruiting.
But again, I had two different well-known college basketball personalities tell me this week, Zach. They brought his name up. I didn't bring his name up. They brought it up. And they talked to Todd Golden a lot. So that was interesting. But I think this team's actually going to have more depth than last season. I'm not saying they're going to be better. They just won the national title, right? But I think they're going to have a little bit more depth. And I think they're going to have, quite frankly, Zach, a lot more position versatility. Okay? Because you really only had one true point guard last year, and it was his first season playing point guard.
Correct.
Because, you know, Denzel Aberdeen was a very good player and could play the point, but I never really viewed him as a traditional point guard.
More of a combo guard.
Yeah, yeah. But now you've got Xavien Lee and Boogie Flame, both guys that absolutely can be ones at the next level.
No doubt.
You know, you've got Tommy Howe, Chinle Yu and Condon can both play probably power or center. I mean, the Browns can play two or three. I think CJ Ingram, the incoming freshman, could play two or three. Alex Lloyd, the incoming freshman, could play one or two, maybe three in a pinch. He's got the arm length. I mean, it wouldn't necessarily be ideal, but if you need three ball handlers out there in key moments of a game, sure, absolutely. He could play the three and give you an improvement in ball handling at the three. So, I just love the position versatility. But, Zach, it's a complete looking team. We got an ad to read before we move on to the next topic.
Or we do. Look at you. You know now. I don't even have to put the thing on the screen.
When you're wrong every single week, you finally figure it out. But take it away here, Zach.
Absolutely. We'll give a shout-out now, as we do each and every week, to Roback. And there's only one way to describe Roback, and that's the best fit, best feel. For those who aren't familiar with Roback, they're completely changing the game with their incredibly comfortable activewear. They've released so many items with their newly licensed Game Day collection, and it's fantastic. Novel polo designs, clean hoodie and Q-zip designs from some of your favorite schools, including the Florida Gators. Nobody else on the market is pairing these level of custom designs with this quality of activewear. Roback has also been proudly leading the NIL charge, having signed partnerships with multiple college stars, past and present, and are becoming the go-to brand for college athletes across the country. Use the code GATORS20 on roback.com for a generous 20% off new customers. That's spelled roback.com. 20% off all performance polos, shorts, and more with the code GATORS20.
All right, Zach, we're recording this Friday morning, so it's been a busy week, obviously. SEC spring meetings took place. You know, it seems like a bigger deal was made of them maybe 10 years ago, but there still are some interesting developments that come out of these things. So what were your big takeaways from the SEC spring meetings, which included, you know, the head of the SEC, head coaches, athletic directors, you know, Billy Napier, Scott Strickland, those types? Just give me two or three takeaways from things that you learned this week.
Yeah, well, obviously, like you mentioned, you know, there really wasn't too much that came out from the Florida side of things. I mean, Todd Golden was there to talk about Alex Condon coming back. And then certainly Billy Napier made some comments, which we'll get into. But a lot of the conversation, you know, circled around the college football playoff, conference expansion, whether or not teams SEC teams should go to an 8 or 9 game conference schedule. A lot of the talking points that we've, you know, been hearing the last couple of years, but, you know, you get all these coaches together in one room and really get a feel for where they stand and where the SEC stands as a whole. Honestly, probably one of the most notable nuggets that came out of the weekend, just in terms of where all the coaches in the league stand on a hot topic, that's the spring transfer portal. Napier, I want to say, I can't remember when he said it last year, or it might have been early 2025, but he came out and said, hey, and talking to the SEC coaches that I speak with, we would like to see the spring portal go away. You know, there's support behind that. A lot of coaches would like to just see one portal window and have it be right after the season, and then that's it. Well, it came out this week that there is, it sounded like unanimous support from the SEC coaches to have that go away. So what that means moving forward, how that looks with the NCAA, because they're ultimately the ones that have to make the call on that. But now you've got the league coaches from the SEC advocating to get rid of the spring portal. And honestly, it makes a lot of sense. Florida has gained some players from the spring portal and benefited from it, but not too many. And they've also lost some guys that would still be on their roster if that wasn't out there. And I think the biggest driving force behind this, no surprise, is all the stuff that has come out this past spring with spring games and teams not wanting to play and teams not wanting to televise them. And a lot of this is because they are worried about the spring portal, which opens after spring camps finish, and teams being able to tune into or watch spring games from other teams and then use that footage to go out and figure out players that they want to recruit in the spring portal. Obviously, if that's not there, that eliminates that. And yes, if you still have spring games, maybe you play some guys in the second quarter or second half that get some action and put some stuff on film that don't ever play in the fall that coming season. And theoretically, some schools or coaches could go back to that spring film and use it to go recruit your guy after the football season. But, I mean, that'd be so far out. There's all these games that get played and all that film that gets produced that coaches from other schools are going to use that to evaluate your roster, not some spring game. So it just completely takes away the concern and the worries from coaches about showcasing their players in a spring game. So it's good to hear that is supported. And honestly, Keith, I hope it happens because I don't want to see spring games go away personally. And I'd like to see them get ramped up to the point that we maybe see schools facing each other in kind of like an exhibition type game. I would love that. I know Colorado tried to do it with Syracuse this spring and the NCAA shut it down. But we'll see.
Yeah, I think that's always been the way to go from a fan's perspective to have
what are we doing?
Play another team. But coaches are so worried about, like, okay, what if two of my guys get hurt in that game and then they miss the season? They're always looking toward the season. I mean,
I get it.
Let's be honest. What's the real reason the SEC teams haven't gone to 9 games? Because that's the potential for one more loss.
No doubt.
I mean, let's just call it for what it is. I mean, you know, but maybe that will happen at some point. I think it's probably going to have to. So there's some uniformity, but who knows? Interesting stuff. Zach, you ready to turn the page to baseball or anything else you want to touch upon?
Well, I'll just mention some of Billy's comments. Okay. You know, he obviously addressed DJ Lagway.
That's right.
Keith, credit to you. You kind of first reported last week the progress that he had been making in speaking with De'Eric Jackson. Billy kind of reiterated that at the SEC spring meetings, revealed that Lagway is throwing 3 days a week now, and even put his pitch count out there, saying that he's throwing. Let me try and find the number here, but that he's throwing 210 passes per week, not counting warmups. So he's really ramped it up. And Napier also added that his workload at this time is normal. It's what all of his quarterbacks are doing this time of year. So he's not only back throwing, but he doesn't have a lighter workload. He's doing what he would have normally done. So that's, I mean, he said he's on schedule. It's clear, Keith, just from hearing Billy talk about it, asking around the program, us talking to Lagway in his camp, there is not a lot of concern about this. I know it was a big storyline in the spring, and I get it. Like, your starting quarterback is not throwing any passes. That's concerning. But it doesn't seem like they're concerned inside the building and inside Lagway's camp. And I think the comments this week just kind of reinforce that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the reason why there was concern by most people or the people that had concern was because the shroud or cloud of mystery, I guess.
Yeah, the unknown, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, where did this come from? He just played in a bowl game. You haven't announced anything that there was anything done. You know what I mean? So, like, what did it all really – how did it get here? What happened? You know, that kind of thing. But that all fades away once a guy starts throwing again and people say he looks good. All right, hey, Billy Napier also commented on a recent arrest by starting cornerback DeJon Johnson. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's his first time that he's come out and made comments about DeJon since his arrest at the beginning of May, and you know, just kind of gave an update on his status with the team, which is that he's still with the team. He's in summer school. He's going through summer workouts. Napier did say that some of the discipline that he will face is already started in house. He's going to handle everything internally. So it doesn't sound like we're going to get any details on what that entails or if a suspension is to come from that. However, Napier made it clear that they're letting things play out and letting the legal process take its course. Napier mentioned that he feels good about Johnson's representation, and it doesn't seem like they're too concerned about this. So I don't know if it's going to lead to him missing any playing time. I guess we'll find out August 30th or maybe the week of the game. But this is not something that's going to hang over his head. One of the few incidents that Florida's had under Napier in terms of legal troubles with a player. But he did say that he hopes that his teammates learn from what DeJon is going through and kind of the situation that he put himself in. And that's kind of where things stand. I don't really see it, kind of lingering into the season or being some type of multi-game suspension or anything like that.
And that's why you play Long Island University in week one as well.
that as well. Also, on that note, I will mention we got some TV times this week for anybody that missed that. They're going to be opening with a night game in the Swamp, Key, 7 p.m. They'll play Long Island on ESPN Plus and SEC Network Plus. Week two, they'll play South Florida in the Swamp at 4:15 p.m. Another night game, week three, SEC opener for the Gators at LSU. The Gators will be playing at 7:30 p.m. in Tiger Stadium, so a night game in Baton Rouge. And then, as always, Florida, Georgia, 3:30 kick in Jacksonville. Those are the kickoff times that we've got so far that the SEC announced this week.
And I'm predicting at least one lightning delay in either week one or week two. All right, Zach, we're going to talk baseball, softball. We want to do an ad read first.
We do. Look. Okay. Now you're reminding me of the ad reads.
Well, you need to get on the ball. What can I tell you, man?
absolutely. Right, let's give a shout out to our guy, Andy, at MyPerfectFranchise.net, who's got a really cool initiative going for baseball season. He's a big baseball fan, and from his line of work, he's seen firsthand the fantastic traits that baseball players bring to the franchise world. And he's offering a donation of up to $500 to $1,000 to Florida's Baseball NIL Collective if anyone from our site purchases a franchise through MyPerfectFranchise.net. He thinks it's a cool opportunity to help the baseball program, and now is the perfect time to contact Andy. His services are 100% free, and he's here to help. If you have any questions about business ownership, head to MyPerfectFranchise.net to learn more. You can call or text Andy anytime at 404-973-9901.
All right, so this week in Friday, Conway, South Carolina, home of Coastal Carolina, the Florida Gator baseball team starts NCAA tournament play. I believe they're 38-20. And you got these great stats. Florida's won 18 of its last 24 games, including 15 of 20 in the SEC after that horrible 1-11 start in league play. And obviously there were some pitching injuries and things like that, but really the team just wasn't playing great. Sometimes none of that too. So a combination of factors, but the reality was they weren't in a good spot. They might be in a good spot this week. In fact, a lot of people out there, you know, you go through and you Google Florida baseball, and a lot of the pundits are saying, hey, this is a team to watch now. They could come through this regional. Coastal Carolina's got an outstanding program. They're going to be the number one seed. They're the host team, obviously. And they have won, Zach, as many national titles in baseball as Florida has. I believe they won it either the year before or the year after Florida won won its national title. In fact, I remember Coastal Carolina, weren't they wearing Russell jerseys still? They were like the last team to wear Russell. Everybody else, right. You know, and nobody could believe it. Like, what happened? They don't have a – yeah. But this is a good program. It's a solid regional. Florida's going to open up against East Carolina, which I believe is sort of on a little bit – correct me if I'm wrong. I want to say they're playing –
Yeah, they just won, they won their conference tournament, which is how they got to the NCAA tournament.
So it's never easy when you get this far. No. I mean, it's a little bit different than the old 16 regionals where your pitching staff could really get worn down to a nub. If you get a good, strong game one performance, you can kind of roll through one of these things. But it seems to me like Florida's got the arms to do this. But they've had some injuries now from some key hitters and – You know, Zach, just what are your general thoughts going into this tournament? Can this team do some damage or do we just not know?
I mean, I don't think Florida could have gotten much of a better draw. Just having to be a two seed and then where they could have gone as a two seed and what teams they could have matched up with in these different regionals. I don't know if it worked out better for Florida with the games that they got. Obviously, ECU is playing well right now. They're playing their best baseball of the year, but they're still a team that, barely got into the tournament. And it is an opponent that Florida should be able to get on the winner's side of the bracket in that first round matchup. And then in Coastal Carolina, look, this is they're a number one seed for a reason. They're hosting for a reason, but Florida has figured it out as a team. They figured it out as a pitching staff. They've had some moments, obviously, offensively, where they've just gone off. They don't have Luke Heyman, which is a big blow because he was part of that offensive surge. But they got some guys that can really make it happen, and those bats can come alive, and Florida can get going. And it doesn't seem like they're going to get Colby Shelton back. There was some hope that Florida starting shortstop would be able to make his return for the Conway regional. But I asked Kevin O'Sullivan on Thursday, and it sounds like it's not going to happen. He said he's still day to day. So Florida is going to have to be relying on the lineup that they've kind of been going with since the Alabama series. They were able to win that series and have a great start to the SEC tournament. So they're playing well at the right time. They've got Liam Peterson that's going to go out there and try to set the tone for them in that first game against East Carolina. And then they really just need to rely on their lineup and the way that they've been playing the last few weeks. I mean, they've limited errors for the most part. They've had some guys step up out of their bullpen, and then they've had different guys in their lineups just have huge moments, whether they're leaving the yard, whether they're getting two out hits. And they just need more of that clutch type of play this weekend.
I think one thing that gives me some optimism for Florida is you look at their strength of schedule, number three in the country. So that they have played everybody good, basically. They played all the top teams. And then their midweek games, which factors into the strength of schedule, obviously, are against teams like FSU. And they're a number one seed. They won that series. And even the FAUs, Stetsons, JUs, those teams all have solid number one pitchers. It's the state of Florida. So even those midweek games, Florida's often facing a high-level pitcher. And so 38 wins doesn't seem like a ton. You know, 38-20, okay record, not great. But in Florida history, Zach, that's a pretty good record. It's not a very good or great record. But there are teams out there this year with 40, 41, 42 wins that are top seeds in this NCAA tournament that are hosting regionals. Despite all its struggles early in the season and playing the number three strength of schedule, Florida's only three or four wins behind some of these teams that are considered favorites to get to Omaha. Yeah. And so that's promising because they could have easily, even with all the injuries, Zach, they left some wins on the table out there. They could have been sitting at 42, 43 wins, no question about it. So
100%.
I think this team is better than maybe a lot of people realize, even without the injuries. And then they've overcome a lot of them too. And that's probably made them tougher. That's a resilient group. you know, I think they got to win that first game, Zach. I do.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that they, yeah, you know, I don't know that they've got the, there's no Jack Caglione that you can roll out there and hit six home runs in a three game stretch. And
And to be able to get that first one on Friday and then come back on Saturday with Aiden King and to kind of put it in his hand to say, hey, go send us the supers. That's Florida's formula to advance. Now, that doesn't mean that they can if they drop a game. But that's certainly what they're going in there with the mindset to do. Because if they can just go through their first two guys, I don't know, you get much better than Peterson and King. I mean, those guys are pitching at a very high level right now. Peterson just had that incredible performance a few weeks back against Arkansas. King was incredible against Texas and Alabama. Those guys got to set the tone for Florida.
Yeah, they're hot right now, though. And I tell you, I think you look at the teams they beat. They won series against Alabama. They won a series against Arkansas. Arkansas could win the whole thing. Yeah. Texas could win the whole thing. So they have been through these battles before. I'm sure there's a level of confidence at Coastal Carolina. This is a very good program. There's no question about it. They've won on the big stage. Not these kids necessarily, but they're part of that program. There's an expectation there. But you had to think that when they saw that Florida was the number two seed coming in.
Oh, man.
I'm sure they still felt good about, yeah, they believe in themselves. Like, you should. And again, like, they're a great program, but they had to have been like, oh, my God, come on, man. Really?
No, you know, that's not great for them.
That was the number two seed that – now watch, you know, you never know what's going to happen, but that was probably the number two seed that nobody wanted to come to the regional. Zach, we also have the Gator softball team playing Friday night at 7 p.m., they opened game one of the women's college world series. Game one was Thursday against Texas. Just didn't really have it. You know, Florida came in hitting well over 350 as a team. Got just a few hits in that game, 3-4 hits. Couldn't really get anything going at the plate. They never got the barrel squarely on the bat against Texas's star pitcher. Texas hit a few home runs, and it was 3-0. But it never really felt like Florida was. They weren't even getting people on base. So it's just a bad performance all around against a very good team, obviously. But now Florida is in a situation. They've got to win Friday night or they're done. The season's over. And they're playing Tennessee, which is the total kind of opposite of Texas and the opposite of Florida. Whereas Florida is a strong hitting team with good pitching, but maybe not elite pitching. Tennessee is a team with elite pitching that really doesn't hit that great. They're just an okay hitting team. So it's a complete contrast in styles. And we're going to be watching that one closely, and we're going to have to see if the Gators can get back to hitting the ball like they've been hitting the ball. But it's win or go home day at the Women's College World Series. Keegan Rothrock probably will get the call on the mound for Florida again. You know, she's only 16-7, Zach, but she missed 5 weeks with an injury, so she's really their ace. ERA slightly over 3, wasn't terrible against Texas, but a few missed pitches that Texas took out of the ballpark and made for a long day for Florida, but they're still alive. The problem is once you lose that first game at the Women's College World Series, it's so hard to come back. It's so hard to come back because, you know, Oklahoma's won 4 straight national titles. They've got some aces on the mound. You may have to face them. Yeah, again, Tennessee's going to throw out a kid today, their Friday night, that's got an ERA well under 2. So the challenge is going to be immense for Tim Walton's team. You never count them out, but it's going to be significant there, Zach.
And they have not played Tennessee yet this season. First time matching up against the Vols. You know, they could have potentially played Oklahoma in the second game, and the Gators beat Oklahoma during a series in the regular season. But I don't know, Keith. I think they can get it done.
I think they can get it done Friday. After that, it then becomes – it's hard to string them together. That's why you got to win first one. It gives you some room for everybody. When I say contrast in styles, here's what I'm talking about. Tennessee's got a team ERA of, I just had it and already lost it here. Hang on 1 second. A team ERA of 1.76. Okay. Opponents hit 176 against the Vols. Okay. So the Gators hit 336 as a team. I said earlier they hit over 350. I meant it's 336 after Thursday's performance that wasn't so great. But Florida has won via the long ball, 107 home runs. So, again, a real contrast in style. Should be an outstanding game. Yeah, Tim Walton said you just got to shake off those first games. If you don't win, I mean, it's easier said than done, but you're playing a different team. You might go out there and you might score 13 runs. We'll see what they can do on
Friday. Yeah, I have a hard time seeing Florida get shut out again. I don't think that's going to happen.
You would hope that wouldn't happen again. You would hope. Zach, any more ad reads, or do we want to promo our big official visit weekend in Gainesville?
No, we're good. We got through them all, but obviously they're just getting started on all these visits, man. Big month coming.
Yeah, they do. And so Florida's going to host. I'll talk a little bit here. Look, for more information, obviously go to GatorsOnline.com. Corey Bender and Blake Alderman have put out a ton of recruiting content this week, not just the regular old updates, but hey, here's some guys that Florida really can get in this class and where they're leaning. And by the way, Zach, Florida's going to host about 18 guys this week on official visits. And the number could change. There could be an addition. There could be a subtraction. But of those guys, there could be maybe half of them could ultimately end up in the class. I mean, it's, they had an official visit weekend a couple weeks ago, and that was kind of seen as the, you know, give it your best shot weekend. Well, it turned out to be better than people thought. They laid the groundwork with some kids. But this weekend, Florida's got a major chance to get a lot of guys on board. The big-name kid coming to town is Braylon Womack, though. He's a five-star safety from Mississippi. That's going to be a real battle. They're going to have to take down Ohio State, Texas A&M, and Auburn to get him. And Ohio State's probably the leader, but that's your main guy in terms of that's your five-star talent coming in. And Florida is on his radar big time because of his relationship with new secondary coach and co-defensive coordinator Vinny Sinsari. So that's a guy to watch. Some other players we're keeping an eye on this weekend: four-star defensive lineman Vodney Cleveland out of Birmingham, Alabama. Florida-Texas battle. Texas seems to have some confidence right now. Florida-Texas, though, that's been a kind of a common theme lately, Zach. A lot of these Florida-Texas battles, four defensive linemen. And that's where you're winning and losing games in the SEC. And these two schools know that. Billy Napier is an old school coach. He believes in building a team from the inside out. Here's another defensive lineman with a Florida-Texas battle likely shaping up that's coming to town this weekend. Jerralyn McCoy of Tupelo, Mississippi, birthplace of Elvis Presley. I always got to point that out. Florida's the team to beat in that one, whereas the other kid, Vodney Cleveland, we think maybe Texas might lead at this time, but Florida second. With Jerralyn McCoy, another four-star defensive lineman, we think Florida leads, but Texas surging. He'll visit Florida this weekend, and I think Texas the following weekend. Hezzy Kent, Zach, is a four-star tight end out of Brunswick, Georgia. South Georgia, where Florida needs to be better at, and I think they're putting a real emphasis in that region. Hezzy Kent looks – he's massive. This guy is enormous. And Florida may be the team to beat for him. He's going to be in town this weekend. We're thinking that's maybe a Florida-Miami battle. Here's a young man that we think Florida's got an excellent chance to land in Hezzy Kent, and another one we think Florida could possibly land at some point. When we say land, we don't necessarily mean this weekend. Zach, as you know, most of these young guys want to take all their visits, get all those NIL offers, to look and pour over. But C.J. Hester is a four-star cornerback from the Space Coast, Coco High School, that's been very good at producing Division I talent and producing Florida Gators. C.J. Hester, you need to know his name if you don't follow Gators recruiting. Florida is the team to beat for him, Coco High product.
He seems like he's going to pop.
Well, if not publicly, maybe privately. I mean, Florida's the clear team to beat there. Maybe Syracuse is the other school to watch. And people say, well, if you're not following it closely, why Syracuse? Well, their head coach, Fran Brown, was a defensive backs coach at Georgia. He's got some real cachet with defensive backs across the country. And Syracuse, quite frankly, is doing a heck of a job, Zach. So that's probably the other team to watch there. There's a local offensive lineman. I consider Ocala local to Gainesville. Janari Carr is from Ocala. He now plays at Bradenton IMG Academy. We got a Florida-Tennessee battle for him. Florida feels really good about that one, and he's going to be in this weekend. So, Zach, there's a lot of guys to watch.
A lot.
And so I want to plug our – there you go, look at that. Visit Scoop at GatorsOnline.com. You're going to want to track it all this weekend because we're going to have a bunch of preview stories on Friday, and we're going to have, as always, for a big official visit weekend, the live blog that puts you inside these recruitments from Friday afternoon all the way to the time these official visitors depart on Sunday. Blake Alderman, Corey Bender do an outstanding job. There's nobody better in the Gators market. Really, there's probably nobody better in the country at covering recruiting than our team at GatorsOnline.com. So, Zach, they've only got two commitments right now, Florida. But it, as we saw last year, they flipped like 12 guys in the final, you know, 4 weeks. I mean,
it's May.
It's May. Now, a lot of people say, well, come on, none of these commitments matter. No, they still matter. But I think the ball starts getting rolling right about now. So this weekend, Florida, 18 guys or so are officially visiting. Next weekend, Zach, will be another big weekend. And then the weekend after that will be Florida's big push for official visits. So these next 3 weekends, the class is really going to start to take shape. And even kids that don't announce, like Jerelyn McCoy, the four-star defensive lineman from Mississippi, well, he's probably not going to pop this weekend, but he's going to announce, I think, July 1st. So June's a big month for visits. July is when you're going to see a lot of these guys announcing. So
no doubt,
we're going to have a real feel for where things are headed in the next 3 weeks. Okay. Yeah. And even with two commitments, they feel really good. They're making moves with Carson Baker, the four-star running back out of Georgia, just canceled an official visit to Ohio State yesterday. And Zach, Steve Wiltfong of On3 put in a pick for Florida. That is significant. You look at the receiver position, Florida doesn't have any guys committed, but they're in it. I mean, legitimately in it with 8 to 10 high-level guys. Offensive line, Florida's got a bunch of guys coming in this weekend. Janari Carr was one I just mentioned from Bradenton IMG, but there are a few others. I think they're going to kind of know maybe who half of their offensive linemen are very soon.
Sure.
You know what I mean, in this class? Defensive line is starting to take shape. Linebacker is starting to take shape. And defensive back, Ravinny Sansari, and another first-year defensive secondary coach for Florida, Deron Wilson, are really doing a hell of a job. And again, no commitments, but we see the groundwork being laid. CJ Hester, Chauncey Kennan is a four-star talent out of Sarasota. Florida's making a huge move for him. CJ Branagh, a four-star Nebraska commit from Windermere, Florida, where Tiger used to live, just outside of Orlando. Again, Nebraska commit, but Florida is trending up and may be able to flip him. He's going to be in town this weekend. So the action really starts Friday afternoon in Gainesville. That's when it all gets rolling. The next 3 weeks are going to be just, this is when the class is going to start to take shape.
And then, if you look at recent recruiting cycles, Keith, the official visitors that they bring in the summer, the percentage of them that they end up landing and signing is usually pretty good. It's usually around 50% or over 50%. Nobody's batting 100 with these guys. But Florida, every single cycle, it seems, has done a very good job of, number one, getting their top targets to campus, which is always the first step, and then landing half or the majority of them or the big ones that they need to get on board. They've done that consistently. And you can go to GatorsOnline.com and kind of look at previous classes and previous official visit schedules and look at how many of those guys ended up Gators. So I've followed and covered recruiting for a long time. You have too, Keith. We can tell everybody out there now is not the time to even be a little bit concerned about the number of commitments yet.
No, and if they're still sitting at two commitments and it's July 30th, yes. Yeah, if go into full panic mode.
That won't be the case.
Right ahead, you know? And you know, who knows what happens last year? Florida doesn't finish strong. Right? They finished strong, and they were able to flip so many guys. But if they don't, I mean, so there is some risk of waiting late to get a bunch of guys. But
most schools want to get the majority of their class in place before the season.
Sure.
You know,
and I will say this too, for anyone concerned. Yeah, obviously on these official visits, you tour the facilities, you get one-on-one time with Billy Napier, your family gets to bond with the staff, you got people off the field, Jacob LaFrance, the GM, Katie Turner, people like that. But NIL, this is when a lot of this stuff starts. You know, this is when they're going to get a real feel for, is this a school that's going to give me as a recruit what I am looking for, and vice versa. I mean, if a kid rolls into Gainesville and is all about the money, Billy Napier may say, well, this guy ain't worth it. He ain't worth the headaches. We want people that are buying it. So it's not all – it's a two-way street. They're feeling each other out. And for anyone concerned about NIL, I wouldn't be. And you're always going to lose a guy here or there to certain schools. But the schools, Zach, that people say are out there spending the most money, two schools always come up, Miami and Auburn. Well, Florida flipped guys from both those programs last year. So you could argue, okay, if you're a Florida person, you may say, well, yeah, they just loved our culture and all. And I don't doubt that. They love the direction of the program. They want to play with DJ Lagway. Don't doubt any of that. But you're not flipping guys from those schools. If those schools are strong in NIL, as everybody says, and, you know, we're not privy to all these numbers, but you're not flipping kids, elite recruits, TJ Dice, the offensive lineman from Auburn, Drake Stubbs, the safety, they flip from Miami. You're not flipping those guys if your NIL game isn't at least comparable, at least in the ballpark. That's right. So for any Gator fans may be worried about that, I would point back to last year and say, you don't flip 10 to 12 guys down the stretch if you don't have some money, okay? I'm sorry, but not every kid's going to UF for the Gator-made program or for the library. I know, Zach, you were all about the library. That's why you picked UF. But I think I went to the library like five times my whole career as a student at UF. But no, I mean, so
To be fair, in the J school, we don't have to spend much time in the library.
That's true. And by the way, I don't say this to poke any hole in anything UF is doing. It still comes down to visits. It still comes down to relationships. It still comes down to player development. And those are things that Florida.
Which is your point, is anyone being worried about NIL, like, don't be. Like, they.
Well, you're going to lose a guy here or there because another school may have a higher value. They may want to pay their guy more just because they have a greater need. But Florida is proving. I mean, Dallas Wilson. Okay, yes, he wanted to be closer to home. But you're not getting that guy. I mean
dude, we can go down the list. DJ Lagway, Caleb Banks, LJ McCray.
Do you think Dallas Wilson's going to take five times less to go to Florida? And again, that is not a knock on anything about Florida. They're doing a great job. But I think the thing is, it's still sort of – some people still haven't crossed that bridge where they feel comfortable talking about NIL. And we have. And we're going to tell you when we think it's a big part of a kid's recruitment. And when we do, we're not implying anything other than it's a big part of his recruitment. Different people have different situations. Zach, I came from just a middle-class family. It probably would have been pretty significant to me, you know. I don't know about you. But anyway, Florida is really positioning itself. It's hard to say this when the team's got two commitments, but they're positioning themselves to have a strong recruiting class. And again, I think a lot of it starts to come to fruition in the coming days. I wouldn't be surprised, and I don't want to steal Corey Bender's thunder, who works with us at Gators Online, but he thinks that three or more commitments this weekend is a realistic possibility. So everybody's going to want to stay tuned to GatorsOnline.com. And by the way, be sure to hit the like button and subscribe button below. Leave a comment. And obviously go to GatorsOnline.com right now. You're going to want to sign up. You're going to want to get all the great VIP premium intel from Zach, from myself, from Corey and Blake, and specifically Corey and Blake right now, this time of year. This is their money season.
Recruiting season, baby.
Recruiting season. It's the first big recruiting season. The next wave will obviously be late in the fall. But Zach, anything you want to add before we get going?
No, man. We'll see how this baseball team and the softball team does on Friday, and they can keep playing to the postseason.
It's just so hard to predict. It really is. I mean, team's red hot, but you know, East Carolina's ace may just go out and throw the best game of his life. I mean, you just don't know.
Yeah.
You really don't. But I like where the Florida baseball team is sitting right now, and I know you do too. So for Zach Albaverde, I am Keith Niebuhr. This is the Gators Online Show. We'll see you again next week. Take care, everybody.